The boy let out a pained groan. She snatched her hands back. Oh my God. Wendy scrambled around to his other side to get a look at his face. He was lying on his side with his arms curled into his chest as if he were sleeping. He was clothed in some sort of material that wrapped around his shoulders and torso, hanging down to his knees. She couldn't tell what it was in the dark, but it had rough, jagged edges, and it smelled like the leaves she dug out of the gutters in the spring. Bracing one hand on the ground, Wendy leaned in closer. Slowly and carefully, she reached out and pushed his wet hair back from his face, brushing her thumb over his forehead. There was something about the way his freckles ran across his nose and under his closed eyes that was familiar. Before she could work it out, a groan sounded deep in the boy's chest. He rolled onto his back as his eyes opened and focused on hers. His eyes were astonishing. A deep shade of cobalt with crystalline blue starbursts exploding around his pupils. "Wendy?" the boy breathed, the smell of sweet grass brushing across her face. Wendy scrambled back from him. At the same time, the boy's cosmos eyes rolled back and fell closed again. Wendy clamped her hand over her mouth. That's a quote from Lost in the Neverwoods by Aidan Thomas. This is YA Book Chat, and I'm your host, Leah Stuhler. Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of YA Book Chat. Thank you so much for being here and continuing to check in every week and listen to the episodes. Thank you especially to my Patreons who help support YA Book Chat and keep me going. Today, we are going to be talking about the book Lost in the Neverwoods by Aidan Thomas. I am so very thrilled to be able to be covering this book. And I have brand new guests on the show with me today, too, which is also very exciting. I've got Drew and Cassie from the Of Slippers and Spindles podcast. And this is perfect because Drew is an extreme Peter Pan fan. So I've picked the right people for this episode. I'm very excited about this. And Drew and Cassie, like myself, also have a background in theater. So we may end up venturing into that area as well. Maybe a little. I mean, there is Peter Pan musicals. So, you know, who's to say we couldn't go there? But
that's right.
Right? I mean, come on, why not?
Well, I mean, Peter Pan was a play before it was a novel. So
the musical is why I fell in love with Peter Pan in the first place. So it all overlaps.
It does. It does. It's very all-encompassing. And there are plenty of movies as well. And I do have one that I wanted to actually bring up a point about when we get there. So it's going to be great. Well, welcome, Drew and Cassie. It's great to have you guys here.
Thank you for having us.
Of course. Why don't you guys tell everybody a little about your podcast?
Yeah, so our podcast is Of Slippers and Spindles. It is all about fairy tale retellings. So we pick a different fairy tale each month, and then we cover four or five movies or books or musicals or sometimes a comic book. There's all kinds of things, and we cover retellings of that specific fairy tale. And then once we get to the next month, we pick another fairy tale and we do it all again.
Nice. Yeah, I love seeing when you guys are covering stuff, because on Instagram, there's always like with this last one for Into the Woods, I loved seeing like all the pictures that you've posted of the original Into the Woods productions, and, you know, multiple productions. It's a lot of fun. So it's always fun to go through and see those.
Well, thank you. We do love Into the Woods. There was a lot of coverage of Into the Woods.
I don't know if we made a good enough point of letting people know how much we love Into the Woods, though. I feel like that might have gotten missed a little bit in our Into the Woods episodes.
You know, I don't know. I mean, yeah.
We not only quite said that we love it like 50 times.
Yeah. I mean, it's fine. It's fine. I'm sure it's kind of like me with The Princess Bride. I mean, anybody who listens to my podcast on a regular basis, you know, it's not like they have any clue about my obsession with it or anything. I mean, come on, you know.
That's Cassie's favorite movie.
It really is. So another reason why you and I should be friends.
I agree completely. And I actually did a Princess Bride bonus episode on my Patreons for my patrons. Mm-hmm. So that
was a lot of fun. Fantastic. Mm-hmm. Fantastic. Before you signed on, Drew, when Leah and I were just chatting, she asked me if I was as much of a Peter Pan enthusiast as you are. And I said, no one is as much of a Peter Pan enthusiast as Drew is. That's an impossible bar to meet.
I know someone who's close. I have a childhood online friend whose name is also Andrew, actually, who he's a huge fan. He may be bigger than me, but there's not many out there.
All right. Well, I'm excited to hear all of your Peter Pan expertise as we get into this episode. All right. So let's get started. So if you have never listened to YA Book Chat before, and just as a reminder, for those of you who do listen, we are going to do the first 15-ish minutes spoiler free. And then I will give you a warning as we head into our spoiler section. So first, I'm going to give you a quick plot overview of Lost in the Neverwoods. Again, this is written by Aidan Thomas, who is also the author of Cemetery Boys and who has a brand new book coming out next year, which looks very intriguing. So I'm excited to find out about that. So this one, I don't want to classify it necessarily as a retelling of the story of Peter Pan because it doesn't take place. You know, it's not the initial story that we're all used to. It kind of takes place after the fact. So it's kind of a continuation of it. And he does retell a few things, but I wouldn't necessarily consider it a complete retelling of the story. But let me give you guys a kind of a recap of what this is about. It's been 5 years since Wendy and her two brothers vanished into the woods near the small coastal town of Astoria, Oregon. Wendy recently returned with no memory of where she had been or what had happened to her. Her brothers did not return. When the town's children start to disappear, the mystery around her brothers is brought back into light, and the police are once again knocking on Wendy's door for answers. Attempting to flee her past, Wendy almost runs over an unconscious boy lying in the middle of the road. Peter, a boy she thought lived only in her stories, asks for Wendy's help to rescue the missing kids. But in order to find them, Wendy must confront what's waiting for her in the woods. So it's got this like kind of like creepy, intriguing, like, ooh, what's going to be in the woods kind of feeling to it, which I love. And it pulls me in.
This is definitely for the kids who, when they were children, liked the scary stories to tell in the dark. Like, this is a Peter Pan for them.
Oh, yes, completely. It's totally like tell scary stories in the dark, Peter Pan story. Agreed. Before we, I want to, of course, talk about, you know, everybody's overall thoughts about the book. But before we go into that, I'm going to tell you all a little story about how I got to meet Aidan Thomas.
I'm so jealous.
Let me tell you, it was fantastic. It was so, this was just a few weeks ago. Some of you may or may not be aware of the book festival called Y'all Fest that happens every year in Charleston. This was the first year it got to be in person in 2 years. And so it was fantastic. And Aidan was there and I was like, have got to meet this person because they wrote this amazing book and I have to meet them, right? So I got there pretty early for his line so that I could be there right at the front and make sure that I got a signature, because what happens at Y'all Fest, in case you've never been, is that if you end up like towards the back of the line, sometimes you don't always get a signature depending on how long the line is and, you know, how long of a, what the author's schedule is for the day. So I wanted to make sure that that didn't happen with Aidan. So I got up at the front of the line as close as I could. I got there really early. And as I'm waiting in line, there was a guy who was giving out some like bookmarks and different paraphernalia and things for a new book that he has coming out. And one of the things that he had was a sticker and it says, I wish for, and then it was blank. And then, you know, you fill in the blank. So he asked me and I had him write on it, for Neverland to be a real place.
Oh, I love it.
So then, because then when I got up to meet Aiden, I had that on my sticker on my shirt. And he was like, oh, that's so fun. And I'm like, I know. No. Okay. So you know how, like, when you go to meet people, you're always like, at least for me, I don't know. Do you guys get like this? You meet like somebody like famous or an author you're excited about or whatever. And you're like, I really, really, really have to try not to like just fan boy or fangirl all over them. You know what I mean? Like,
I get so nervous meeting famous people, even if I know I'm just going to briefly interact with them. My heart like pounds in my chest. Mm-hmm.
I'm a children's librarian. And so I've had the opportunity when we've had author visits to our library to like not only briefly meet at whatever session they do, but occasionally like go out to dinner with them. I got to go out to dinner with Jane Yolen, which. Nice.
What?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I went crazy. To dinner with Jane Yolen, Drew.
How do I not know that?
Big time. And she, you know, we gave her a tour of our library and she talked us through, you know, her writing process. And her whole thing is if you don't come up with 5 ideas for a book every day, you're not working hard enough. And so she was giving us examples by walking around our children's library and she took our craft and she was like, see this, I could write a picture book called Diaz for Dinosaur. And we spent the rest of the evening brainstorming what that picture book would look like. And so the next day, she sent the manuscript of text for that picture book to my boss.
Stop it.
And she said, I don't know that this will ever go anywhere because she, you know, writes a lot of manuscripts. It's genial. And she's published over 300 books. And she said, but if this ever does go anywhere, it will be dedicated to the children's librarians of the Wood County District Public Library, which is my library. So there is a not zero chance that someday Jane Yolen will dedicate a picture book to me, kind of.
Wow.
And like, I was trying so hard not to just completely fangirl, but I brought copies of her books, like from my own library, not just what we were selling. So I brought up to her like Armageddon Summer, which she wrote with Bruce Koval, who I've also met through my job at the library. And like Sword of the Rightful King, which is her Arthur story, like some of her more obscure titles. And I was like, these are the ones I want you to sign.
That's cool.
So cool.
So yeah. And I had to keep from hijacking our Skype chat with Bruce Koval just to talk about like my favorite books of his from when I was a child, because I'm like, he's not here for me. He's here for the children. So that one was really hard as well. But yeah.
See, at Y'all Fest, it's like, no, you're here for me. Like I'm
exactly,
you're here for me, you know? So, it was, I tried so hard to hold it together. I think I did all right, but I even still spewed out like probably more words than I had hoped to. I was like, try not to talk too much, Leah, try not to talk. Anyway. So I was like, you know, I just told him, I was like, how much I loved the book. I'm like, this is the best Peter Pan story that I have ever read. Like I couldn't put it down. I told him all the things. We talked about it. I showed him my sticker, which we talked about. And then I did, and he was so nice. And then I did tell him, because I did do this, I had contacted his publicist, whatever, that on his website to see if he could come on the podcast, because I really would love to have Aiden on the podcast. But she was like, no, he's too busy right now because he's in editing process still of his new book. And I was like, oh, so I said, well, maybe, but I told her, I said, well, I would love to have Aiden on for the new book when that comes out next year. And she's like, yeah, we might be able to do that. So I said, okay, great. So I told him that I was like, yeah, I contacted your publicist to see if you could come on my podcast. But she said, you're really busy. He's like, yeah, it's crazy right now. And, you know, but you know, maybe for the next book, that would be great. And then he gave me a, Cemetery Boys necklace. Like he had a Cemetery Boys necklace. Would you like this?
Aww,
yeah. Yeah, that would be great. Thanks. And he was just super sweet. And we took a picture together and it was awesome. And I, yes, all the excited things. And it was fantastic. So
I'm so jealous. I hope he comes on.
Oh my gosh, me too.
That would be so awesome.
Yes.
That would be fantastic.
I'm telling you, I have like a list of, I mean, I've had so many fantastic authors on this podcast already, which still like blows my mind at some of the authors I've had on, but I, you know, still have this like huge list of here's who I would love to also have on more in the future. So we'll see. And Aiden is definitely one of them, but
fingers crossed.
Yes. Yes. We shall see. All right. So let's let's get started with our thoughts on this book. I'm going to let you two go first. Still spoiler free. And let's talk about your, what you thought about the book, kind of just overall.
I'll go first. I love this book quite a bit. That should not be a surprise because it's a Peter Pan retelling. So pretty much any Peter Pan thing I'm going to love. I do agree with you. It's not so much of a retelling. I think the word I would use is reimagining, because it is kind of sequel-y, but it is kind of retelling part of the Peter Pan story. It's a little bit of the, a little bit of this, a little bit of that. I think the setting is so vivid. Part of that is because it's a real setting that Aiden has been to. And so like things like the coffee store, Coffee Girl, and the ice cream shop, those are real places that he's been to. And I think that that lends itself very well to like this vivid, real place that you can kind of see in your mind, for me at least. And then I think just the mystery is engaging. The characters are really compelling. Peter and Wendy, I'm a big proponent of the idea that Wendy is the main character of the original Peter Pan story. So I loved being in her head and seeing the story so clearly from her perspective. And then, of course, I love all of the references. There are so many wonderful references. I have a ton of them written down. I'm sure we'll get into them when we get into the spoiler section, because I don't even want to say them, even if they like don't spoil the story. Like, I want readers to experience them for the first time on their own, because they're so much fun.
Yes, they are. And while I did catch a bunch of them, I would imagine that you caught even more than I did. So I am excited to see what you picked out that I missed, because I'm sure there's a lot more. I'm excited
to see what you picked up on, like what someone who's not, who doesn't know the original text as well as I do, to see like how much you two picked up on them. So yeah, I think that'll be a fun part to talk about.
I mean, I love Peter Pan, and I've seen the Mary Martin version of the musical more times than I could possibly count. And likewise, I've read different versions of the book. I've seen Kathy Rigby perform this thing. Like, I've watched Hook, which I know is different, but it's still Peter Pan.
I love Hook.
And I love it. I actually use Hook in one of my acting class, one of my classes that I teach, because I'm a theater teacher. I don't know if the two of you knew that. So So I use Hook for one of my classes when I'm teaching them about pantomime, and I show them the scene where they're eating, and Peter's like, what? There's no food here. What are you doing? Cause I'm like, this is like awesome pantomime skills. But anyway, so I have lots of knowledge of it, but I'm sure that yours is much better than mine. So I'm curious to see what I missed.
Since you're aware of Kathy Rigby, since we just talked about like meeting celebrities, let me tell you my little connections to Kathy Rigby. So my mom actually saw a production of the tour of Peter Pan with Kathy Rigby on it when she was 7 months pregnant with me. So I do believe that that is like part of my origin story with Peter Pan. I got to see her perform it live when I was about 15. Obviously, I've seen the DVD of her performance many times, but meeting her and seeing her live and then meeting her afterwards, and I got her autograph, was so awesome. And then this past July, I actually had a major surgery, and I my workplace sent me a video of like all of these people from my workplace, you know, wishing me luck, and it was very, very nice. And it ended with a message from my best friend from college, which was a great surprise. And then after that was a video from Kathy Rigby.
Stop it.
Herself sending the encouragement, and the way I cried.
Oh, I'm sure.
The way I sobbed. It was just like one of the most meaningful things that's ever happened to me in my entire life. So I love Kathy Rigby. I think she is my favorite portrayal of Peter Pan on film ever. She means a lot to me.
Oh, that is so awesome. I love that, Drew. That is so fantastic. I don't even have words now, because it's just so amazing. And it speaks for itself. That is so awesome. All right. So Cassie, what did you think about the book?
I really enjoyed this book. I read it all in one sitting, and that was only partly out of necessity in order to get it done in time for this podcast, because Thanksgiving is a really big holiday with my family and very time consuming. So I had to come home and be like, okay, I've got to sit and read. And some of the books that Drew and I have read recently on our podcast, if I'd had to sit and read them all in one sitting, it would have been almost unbearable. But this one was, it was really easy to sit down and read all in one sitting. And I think this is one of my favorite depictions of the character of Peter Pan that I've ever read. Sometimes the character annoys me with how he's portrayed and how he's written. Like sometimes he's just that kind of little boy, cocky, irritating, which he's kind of supposed to be. But it's like, I read it and I go, ugh. But this Peter Pan, I absolutely loved his characterization. I loved his depiction. We'll talk about that a little bit more when we get into spoilers. But the role and the representation that he was given in the way that they imagine Neverland, I thought was absolutely brilliant. And I just loved that. And what I think is really successful about this book is I don't think you need to be that familiar with Peter Pan to enjoy it. And I think that's the mark of a good retelling. If you want a novel that is a retelling to have broader appeal than just people who are fans of the original thing, it has to be able to stand on its own with somebody who's not familiar with the story. And I think this one does a good job of giving you the information that you need to understand what's going on without requiring you to be intimately familiar with the original kind of story. I thought it was very successful in that regard. I liked seeing grown-up Wendy because she's 18 when we meet her. I like kind of seeing the impact that Neverland had on her, even though she doesn't necessarily remember right away what that impact was. And I just thought it was a very successful reimagining of the story and also just a very successful like young adult novel, full stop.
Yeah.
Which I think is really important to aim for.
Yeah, I agree on all of those things. It's just, it's such a fantastic book. Like I could not stop it. So when I read this initially, I had planned to like read the book, the hardcover, but I ended up doing it on audiobook. And because I was reading something else, and you know, you guys know how it goes when you're podcasting, you're like, I mean, I at any given time have like three different books at a time going on, and I'm trying to figure out what my schedule is going to be for the next few months and all the things. So I ended up listening to this one on audiobook. And by the way, the narrator is really good. I enjoyed the narrator. And it was just, and it was like painful. It was painful because I had to stop listening. Like I'd get home and I had to turn it off. And I was like, ah, I can't stop. Right. And what is like, this is not okay. Like, you know, but I'm in the middle of, you know, I was in the middle of like play rehearsals at school and all these other things. And I was like, you know, my kids have sports like three times a week. And I'm like, ah, so I had to do it audiobook. And it was just like torture having to wait to get back into the car the next day to listen to more of it because it was just that good. And I loved it. But speaking of the hardcover book, the cover is just gorgeous.
Oh, it's beautiful.
Can we just talk about this for a minute? Like the colors, the purple colors, the silhouettes of what I'm guessing is John and Michael, and then Wendy walking into the woods, the black that it is. Oh my gosh. It's just so perfect and beautiful.
I interpreted the silhouettes differently, but again, we'll talk to that. Talk about that.
I see who else you think it.
Yeah.
Can, yeah. Cause it does
I know who you think they were as well, or how you interpreted them. But I will say Aidan Thomas has confirmed that they are John and Michael. Okay. But I love that you can interpret it in different ways.
You can interpret it in multiple different ways.
Yes, based on the story, you can definitely interpret it different ways. So I agree, you know, with what you guys were all saying too. I just absolutely loved it. It was very creative. Without spoiling anything, Peter Pan and Neverland and the roles that they play in the story were so different. And it gives me a completely different perspective on the Peter Pan story. Like now when I go back and watch Peter Pan or read the original story, I'm not going to look at it in the same way anymore, which is not a bad thing. Like it's good because I like that this was a very unique and original perspective on it. And it just kept me on the edge of my seat. It had some really good, like unexpected plot twists that were in it. And like you were saying too, I loved the characters. I loved being inside Wendy's head and getting her perspective. I loved also how much more of Peter we got, because while I love the story of Peter Pan, it's very, they're him and Peter and Wendy are almost like surface like characters in some ways, you know, in the other stories. So in this one, we really get in depth more with both of them and really discover who their characters are more fully. And so I really liked being able to explore that and kind of see who they were and where it went. And then it did have an aspect to it that as a little girl growing up watching Peter Pan, I kind of always thought, maybe, you know, this should happen. Like this particular thing should, why doesn't this happen? This particular thing needs to happen. And then in this book, it did. And so it was very satisfying for me to feel like, oh, good. Somebody else had that idea too and thought that that should happen as well. And so, yes, there it is. It's fulfilling. So I really liked that too.
I'm very much with you on this. I'm very much.
You probably know what I'm talking about. I think it's probably a question or something that most people who know Peter Pan have thought about in one way or another. You know, like it's kind of an obvious, like, why doesn't this happen? Like it seems like it should, but I don't know. So I'm really okay. This is kind of like a different thing, and I don't think I've ever said this about any of the other books before. But I really like the dedication that Aiden did in the book, because it says, for every heavy heart that had to grow up too fast. And it's just, it's so poignant and meaningful in so many different ways. And yeah, it means a lot. And I feel like, I don't know about you guys, but you know, growing up, I think that a lot of us probably had one, you know, fairy tale land or place that we were always like, you know, or one book that we read where we were like, oh, I wish that this was a real place, you know, like maybe it was Oz for some people or Middle Earth for other people or whatever, right? Like for me, I always wanted Neverland to be real and for Peter Pan to be a real person, you know? So this one is this really special for me in that way too, because it brings it into our world, you know, more, it's more, it feels more real and contemporary than like the regular Peter Pan story. So it's like more like, yeah, Peter Pan could be real, you know, it gives me still that childlike hope of that.
Yeah. I don't think this is a spoiler. If it is, you can cut it, but okay. I think they really successfully modernize Peter or show him experiencing the modern world in interesting ways. Like there's a moment where he gets in a car and he says, I've never been in a car before. And then as they're going down the road, he says, this is like flying, but bouncier. And I think that is so cool. Like that they thought of incorporating that into this book.
Yeah, I agree. It just gives you a totally different perspective on it. It's really unique. I like it. Anything else before we head into our spoiler section?
No, I want to talk spoilers.
Me too. You ready, Cassie?
Absolutely.
Okay. Oh, by the way, you should both know, I have decided that my school play for next year is going to be Peter Pan.
Yes.
I'm not doing a musical because I don't do musicals.
Ooh, interesting.
I'm going to do a play version of it. So we're going to see how that goes. But
that's cool. The play doesn't get done that much anymore. Everyone just does the musical now.
But
my theater group did the play about 10 years ago. I didn't direct it, but I mentored the director. And we did the play version, J.M. Barrie's, like the original play version. And it was fun. We had a good time with it.
Yeah, I'm excited.
That's so cool. I've never seen it. I've only ever seen the musical. So I would love to see the play on a stage.
It's going to be tricky for me because I'm to not do it the musical because I'm so used to it and I'm going to probably be singing the songs all throughout rehearsals, but we're just, anyway, long story. We're just not at the place at school where we're going to do a musical. So, but I'm going to do the play.
One step at a time.
Mm-hmm. Yes. yes. So, all right. Well, let's get into spoilers here. So, if you have not yet read Lost in the Neverwoods and do not want anything to be spoiled, then this is the point where you would stop listening, go read the book because you really need to read this one, and then come back and listen to the rest of the episode afterwards. Or if you have read the book or you really just don't care about spoilers, then please continue listening on. All right. You have been warned. So here we go. Okay. So I do kind of want to start with just talking about some of the characters and like Peter and Wendy, and that will lead us into different plot points too. But because they're just so much, like we said just a few minutes ago, there's so much more in depth in this book than you get in the other story. And it was something that I really enjoyed. I felt so bad for Peter because Wendy has no clue who he is at the beginning. Like, she doesn't remember him. And poor Peter is just like so desperate to get her help and to get her to remember him, you know? And
is a fascinating reversal. Mm-hmm. Because usually it's Peter who forgets about Wendy.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah.
I loved that right off the bat. I was like, this is fascinating.
Yeah. Wendy always, except in Disney's version, which is interesting, Wendy always knows who Peter is before he arrives. Actually, maybe the 2003 one with Jeremy Sumpter as Peter Pan, I don't think she knows specifically who he is in that version, but in the original book and the original play, she tells the stories of Peter Pan to John and Michael. And so it's interesting that here at the beginning, she doesn't know who he is. But then also, like you said, at the end, usually Peter comes back and he forgets Tinkerbell. He forgets Hook. Like, he's the one who forgets. But in this version, Wendy, because of her trauma, she has unintentionally blocked out what has happened.
Right. And that, you know, I hadn't originally thought about it either, but saying it that way with her trauma, I mean, that's something that really happens to a lot of people. You know, this is like a serious thing that happens where people go through these traumatic events and then they just kind of block things out. And it can be years before that information, whatever, what really happened to them gets brought back out.
I also think it's fascinating to look at this when we're talking about characters and to look at the absence of characters, because this is a Peter Pan that does not have a Captain Hook and it does not have Tinkerbell.
Well,
I mean,
it does have a Captain Hook. kind of,
but like that character that is such a big part of the Peter Pan story isn't really here.
Right.
Yeah.
Like, you can make the argument of representation, but
Hook is one that I think is like, he's interesting because he, like you said, he's not there as we know him. He's not in Neverland, but he is still like represented in different ways. Whereas I think the absence of Tiger Lily is really interesting. And the absence of Tinkerbell especially is particularly jarring. Like, that was probably my biggest critique when I read it, was just that I was looking for her everywhere. I understand cutting Tiger Lily because there's a lot of complicated things with Tiger Lily and the representation of her and the tribes in the original story. It's frankly very racist and has not been portrayed well over the years. I think we're getting into a place where it is being reinterpreted and looked at in really positive new ways. But I understand, you know, cutting her because that's not really what this story was here to deal with. But Tinkerbell, you know, I just was looking for her everywhere and she wasn't there. And so that was, like I said, a little jarring for me.
Yeah. I mean, he does mention the fairies in Neverland, but that's all that we get, you know, we really don't get any other kind of representation of her. And it was a little bit strange.
On the second read, so I've read this twice because I read it at the beginning of the year, but on the second time, like, once you know she's not there, it's fine. It doesn't affect the story in any way. It's not a big deal. But like the first time, I was just a little confused because I expect Tinkerbell. I don't mind that she's not there though.
No, and I actually think that it helps that she's not there, just because traditionally she's portrayed as being extremely jealous of Wendy. Yes. I mean, She says nasty things about Wendy. She tries to have the Lost Boys kill Wendy. So it, and with the way that this story works out, it would not have worked to have Tinkerbell in here. It would have been entirely too complicated if she was that same jealous figure.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, this is a great transition into mm-hmm. a discussion about Peter and Wendy, right? Because
yes.
Listen, it is should be no surprise to anybody that my first ship was Peter and Wendy. And it is so wonderful and satisfying because no one will let it happen, right? It doesn't happen mm-hmm. in Hook because there's an age gap now. It doesn't happen anywhere. Mm-hmm. And this gives us such a satisfying, like, pro Peter and Wendy angle. And having Tinkerbell there would, you know, change what's happening mm-hmm. in this version of the story.
Yeah, I think the closest that we've gotten before this is the 2003 movie.
Yes.
Because they definitely made it part of what Wendy was going through and part of what Peter was going through. But here I love that it is very much tied into the story. Because I think mm-hmm. one of the perpetual questions that gets asked around Peter Pan is, okay, but what if Peter did grow up? Because mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. because when you have a character whose whole thing is he'll never grow up, you have a character that's automatically a little bit stagnant. There's mm-hmm. no real place to take a character arc because the whole thing is he'll never grow up, he'll never change.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think some of the more modern interpretations have asked that question a little bit more. Okay, but what if he started to change? Like, what impact would that have? And I like that this book kind of really carries that question into the forefront. What happens to Peter if he does start to grow up? If he does start to age? What would make that happen? And what would the ramifications of that be? And I thought that was a fascinating exploration.
Yeah.
This is my primary point in why Wendy is the protagonist of Peter Pan, because a protagonist has to grow and change, and mm-hmm. Peter can't, and Wendy does.
Yeah, that's very true. I hadn't thought about it like that before, but yeah, this is what I was referring to earlier. Like, the one thing that I've always been like, this should happen, but it never has. And it's like Wendy and Peter, you know, having a relationship. Now, I mean, okay, they can't really have like a lasting relationship.
Yeah, I still definitely had that moment.
Yeah.
I still had that moment when they have the conversation of like, I can't stay in your world because I have a job to do and you can't come back to Neverland, obviously.
Because it'll mess things up again.
There was still that moment where I was like, come on.
I
just
know.
Let it happen. Let them be happy.
But at least we got a little bit more of it. You know, like we did get some relationship there, which is really good. They kissed, you know, like, oh, they comfort each other, all the things. Like, so it is very satisfying in that. And then at the very end, when she's at college and she's like laying out on the grass and she hears the cricket sound and she sits up, you know, there's that hope of he still comes around and visits her and she still remembers him. So, So I did like that a lot, but yeah, the whole time I was like, and you know, and Wendy keeps asking the question, like, well, what's going to happen if you grow up? Cause he gets older and, you know, older throughout the book as it goes on. And we just don't know what's going to happen. And so exploring that was really cool. And I love that she has the acorn necklace that
yes.
connects her and helps her remember.
Yeah. I was expecting it to be a little more explicitly laid out about like, this contains her memories and holding it reveals those memories. But I like that it's left a little ambiguous about what this item is and how it works exactly.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's definitely implied that that's how it works, but it didn't need to be, you know, perfectly laid out with where it came from and how it works and all of that.
Right. Exactly.
Yeah. I think having him like give it to her and say, this is so you'll remember. And then knowing why he had to send her back alone. I think that's one of the things where it's really, they let the reader kind of put all that together for themselves.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Cause I like that we kind of get everything in bits and pieces as we go through to like, it's like putting a puzzle together, you know, cause sometimes I've read books before where you're reading and you kind of get little hints, but then like, you know, you get three quarters of the way through and all of a sudden it's info drop and you get all mm-hmm. of the backstory and what happened in one dump, you know, whereas this one was like little flashbacks, little things in her memories and her drawings and, you know, things coming like piece by piece until she does, you know, that one night, finally remember the whole story of what happened.
I like that Aiden Thomas is able to trust his reader.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Because I think that's really important. And it's a hard balance to hit. And I think he does it very, very well.
I agree. So I'm going to guess, Cassie, that you are thinking that this, that you were thinking that the silhouettes on the cover were Peter and his shadow.
Peter and his shadow. Yeah.
I
love this interpretation of the shadow as the villain. Like, this made the book for me. And reimagining Peter's role as the farrier of lost souls.
Mm-hmm.
It was so perfect. Like that's his job, and that is why he is light and joy and happiness. It's so that he can set these wandering souls at ease and help them transition. And like the moment where it's revealed that John and Michael are dead was like just a gut punch. It was so powerful and heartbreaking. And this whole idea of, and that's why things started to go wrong, because Wendy shouldn't have gone to Neverland, but he took her there anyway, because she begged him to, so that she wouldn't be left alone. And like, just that reveal, it wasn't completely surprising. Like I hadn't said to myself before, oh, I'll bet John and Michael are actually dead. But it was one of those reveals that when you read it, you go, that makes perfect sense. For everything that we've learned so far.
Yeah, it did.
You like go through it with Wendy, where she is so back and forth about, I want them to be alive, but is that likely? Is that possible? And she has so much hope, but also so much, you know, devastation from the last, I forget how long it was, but from the last few years about not knowing. And you're there with her going back and forth. And so when the reveal happens, you're still there with her. You are experiencing that loss as well, which is just a testament to how good Aiden is at just writing.
Oh, yeah.
And
just, I mean, being inside of Wendy's head as she discovers that it was, like gut-wrenching. I mean, I'm like sitting there like in my car, like, you know, listening and crying because I'm like, no, like, again, you knew, like you kind of figure that they would be dead, but it's still like really hard and sad to get it from her perspective. And then like that whole scene, you know, like when the shadow comes in, her and Peter alone in the bedroom, her old bedroom, and then the shadow comes in and messes up their kissing moment, which, excuse me, shadow, that's just rude. And then, you know, and the shadow reveals all the things about Peter Pan and who he really is. And then they leave, and Wendy just has that moment, you know, where she clutches the acorn and remembers all the things. I mean, because then on top of it too, she's got Mr. Davies, like the realization that her neighbor is. So it's not just like, okay, Peter Pan is not who he told me he was. It's all these things at once, right? Peter Pan's not who he said. He actually carries fairies, like children's dead, you know, souls to the afterlife. And so I messed everything up by going there because I was alive and not dead. And then my brothers are really dead. Oh, and our neighbor who's been like super nice is the one who killed them. And he's been lying about it for 5 years, you know, but then like for her to like have all of these things at once. Right. But then you expect her to give up at that moment, right? Like a normal, typical thing would be like, okay, we're done. I'm going to give up now, or I'm going to be mad at Peter for like, you know, two more chapters before I finally realize, no, it's okay. You know, and I need to fix this. But that's not what she does. She's like, no, I'm not going to let this get me down. I'm not going to let this determine. I still need to help Peter. I need to help these kids who are missing, and then bring, you know, the light on Mr. Davies and what really happened. And so she just like is all gung ho, and she gets up, brushes herself off, grabs her sewing kit and goes into the woods, which, by the way, I love that. It's like, sew the shadow back on, fixes it again. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's perfect. And I love that in that moment when she's, when she remembers everything finally, she is racked with guilt. You know, she feels like this is her fault. It is clearly not her fault at all, but it makes sense. You know, she has survivor's guilt. Like she is devastated, and she starts to reflect on Mr. Davies and how he has let her family suffer. And it didn't just, you know, they didn't just lose John and Michael. They lost each other because they were torn apart over this horrible thing that's happened. And she starts thinking about all these other children that have gone missing. And if she's the one who knows the truth. And so if she doesn't get up and go stop the shadow from killing Peter and ultimately those other children, all of those families are going to go through the same thing that she has had to go through. And she says, she's able to put her guilt aside and say, this is not about me. This is about them. And I have to do this for them. And that's just so compelling.
Yeah, the depiction of grief and trauma in this is so well done because what's happened to the darlings as a result of losing their boys and their daughter and then getting their daughter back is so, it felt so real because you've got a family that's fractured. You've got a mother who throws herself into her work, into caring for other people. And you've got the father who is drinking and is disconnected and is overprotective. And you've got the girl with the guilt who's trying to hold everything together and has this mentality of, if I can keep the house clean, if I can keep the chores done, if I can do all of that, then I'm holding my family together. And when families lose children, it very frequently can tear them apart. And so that exploration is such a beautiful moment. And when Wendy reveals to her parents what happened to the boys and that they're dead and that she feels responsible, that reaction was so beautiful to me too, with her mother, you know, gathering her up and telling her, you know, this is not your fault. And this is our fault. Like, we've let you take on this role and we've let you do this. And like that moment of healing, like, made me tear up and cry. And I mean, part of that's because the last couple of days have been emotional for other reasons. We're all mourning Stephen Sondheim at the moment. And so then to read this book about like grief and loss and death and trauma, you know, but I just thought the depiction was so well done. And it's really a testament to Wendy's character that she is able to continue to care so much for other people and be so compassionate despite the trauma that she has suffered. And I thought that that was just depicted so beautifully. If I have one criticism, like one moment of this novel where I went, that seems a little hard to believe, it's that drunk Mr. Davies fired two shots and hit both of her brothers with the two shots. For me, I was a little like, I would have preferred if they had been like roughhousing in the snow or like wrestling and it was one shot that got both of them. Like, that would have been easier for me to believe. But again, that is such like a tiny little thing where I was like, it's fine. But
I will say though, here's what I'm going to say, because my husband goes hunting and his brothers go hunting. And so, and also, while we were at my brother-in-law's house for Thanksgiving, I was watching this show called The Last Alaskans, and they're all like live in the wilderness and we're hunting a lot. Anyway, so because he was hunting, I will say this, you hunters will often shoot the animal more than once because they have to make sure that it's dead. So it's so like, to me, when I was reading it, it didn't bother me at all because it's normally not just one shot. They normally will shoot it more than once because one is like to take it down. And then the other shot might be like to make sure that it's really dead, you know, because especially if it moves again, like they might shoot it again after it moves. So I don't know. For me, that didn't bother me, but I can see why you would say that.
Yeah, I didn't think about it, but I can see why, like you said, I can see why you would say that.
I don't have, you know, any experiences with hunting at all. So yeah, that's okay. Perfectly valid. And as like I said, it was like such a tiny little detail that I was able to be like, it's fine. But that was like a thought that briefly pulled me out of the story as I was reading.
Yeah.
On the topic of Mr. Davies, though, I think that the red herring with Mr. Davies and Detective James is so good. So good. The first time I read this, I was like, okay, Detective James is Captain Hook, right? Because the name James, Captain Hook's first name is James. The other cops are named after the pirates. So you have Checo. You have Smith, who I assume is supposed to be Smee.
Me too.
You have Rowan. I don't know who Rowan is supposed to be.
Okay, good. I'm glad it wasn't just me because I didn't know either.
No. The name Rowan is derived from like an Irish word that means red. So there is a pirate named Red-Handed. Oh, well, Red-Handed Jill is Wendy's nickname if she's going to join the pirates. Actually, it's John's nickname. I don't know. I don't know who Rowan's supposed to be. But so I totally bought it. And then on top of that, Detective James has like this painting of a ship, and he's got a silver ring on his finger. And I was like, oh, we are going to find that hand in the woods, cut off. I was like, I know where this is going. And then you take a completely left turn and it's this other character. And, you know, Wendy talks about having a dream that she's being chased by a pirate in a red coat with a black beard. And Mr. Davies is described as, you know, he has a signature red plaid and he's got a dark beard. And I totally bought it. And, you know, even the name Davies comes from the Llewellyn Davies boys, who are the boys, the family that the author Jane Barry based Peter Pan on. They are the inspiration for Peter Pan. So I caught that right away. So I was like, maybe this character will be important. But I didn't connect that he was going to be Hook. And then Wendy has another dream, which I didn't catch until the second time I read it, where it's not a dream, it's the memory where the boys are painting on the beach, right? And she notices that there's red paint dripping on Michael's chest and red paint on John's neck. Mm. And that is where they were shot.
Yeah.
And I didn't catch that until the second time when I got to that. It was like, oh my gosh, this is so good. All of this is just woven together really, really well.
It is. It's perfect.
I also laughed out loud when she's trying to introduce Peter to her friends. And she's like, this is Barry.
Barry, Jane Barry. Yeah.
Barry. Yes. And very clever, right?
You get Matthew in there too, because one of Mr. Davies' sons is named Matthew. Mm-hmm. Yep.
I love it. It's just all the tiny little nods. So, okay. So they talk, I don't know what you, this might be like far out and left field here. Okay. But they talk about Nana, the dog Nana, right? And she's with them and then Nana goes missing. Okay. So I kind of felt like, I don't know what you thought, but Nurse Judy kind of seemed like she could be like a surrogate Nana. You know what I mean? Cause like Nana always took care of the kids and Nurse Judy is always taking care of Wendy and her family and trying to help them. I don't know. I know that one's like a bit way out there, but maybe it's like a tiny one or I'm just reading into it completely. I don't know.
I didn't think of it. Judy is not a name that is connected to Peter Pan. So I think you could interpret her however you want. I would have loved to have seen her named Liza because Liza is the maid in Peter Pan. I would have loved to have seen that little connection there. Jordan is another one who's interesting.
I kept trying to fit Jordan in somehow to the overall.
I don't know who
narrative she and I don't be. Think that she's meant to have a counterpart.
Yeah,
I don't think so either. I think she's probably just meant to be what she is, where she's like Wendy's, you know, best friend and sounding board. And because we need somebody for Wendy to have a conversation with, you know, like sometimes some of these conversations need to happen, you know, and even just Jordan, like, because Jordan brings up the pictures that Wendy's draws. You know, and she mentions like her drawing the boy all the time and the tree and like all the things that Wendy doesn't even realize that she's drawing, which I thought was another really cool thing that he did, where like she's not even realizing that she's drawing. She just looks down and is like, oh, You know, what did I just do? I thought that was really cool too. But so I don't, yeah. But so I didn't think Jordan was supposed to be anybody in particular. I think she's just supposed to be this character who kind of, you know, helps out and is our, we need our protagonist. She's got to have a best friend, right? They all have the best friend who they can have the chat with.
Protagonist, a complete loner.
No.
I also, I really appreciated even more in hindsight, like understanding what he's doing with Neverland and with Peter and like Peter's role with the souls of these children who have passed in violent ways. I really like the absence of any of the Lost Boys from the novel. They're not even hinted at. Like, they're not even given name recognition anywhere else. You don't have Slightly. You don't have Tootles. And I liked that because in hindsight, whoever the Lost Boys were with Wendy when she was there, they would hopefully have moved on. And right. I caught immediately that they referred to them as the Lost Ones instead of the Lost Boys. Like immediately that stuck out to me. Even before you understand like what they're doing with these characters and with this world. I liked that they were referring to them as the Lost Ones and kind of leaving the door open for it's not just boys.
Right.
Yeah, it's interesting because I think that's becoming more common. Even the live action Disney adaptation that's going to be coming up, they have added some lost children and some of the boys are now girls. So like, I think Curly, for example, is now going to be a girl. And I don't know that I don't know if I love this. I think in this instance, it's perfect, but I don't know if I love it in a traditional, just like normal adaptation of Peter Pan, because it's so important for Wendy's character that she is coming to be a mother to these boys. And there's a whole line about we'll ever to get lost. And I think it's interesting.
I think it works if they take a West Side Story route with anybody's from West Side Story, who's like the one girl in the gang, but she doesn't like, she just wants to be one of the boys. She doesn't want to be seen as a girl.
Yeah.
So I agree. I think that it's important that Wendy is the only girl if you're retelling the traditional story.
Mm-hmm.
But for this story, I like the shift and the change.
Yeah, I did too. I agree. It did not bother me at all that they weren't there. And I caught it as well right away that it said Lost Ones. And I was like, huh, that's interesting. What does that mean? And then, and of course, you know, we figure that out later. But
you can kind of interpret the children who go missing in a way as the quote unquote Lost Boys, because you do have the two brothers who could be the twins.
Yeah, I was trying to.
Alex, who could kind of be Tootles because he's the little one and he's shy.
Yeah.
And then you've got like the older two. So like you could make that argument, but to me, it's just like a new generation.
Yeah.
Kind of. Yes, I agree. Of lost boys, lost ones cycling through.
I agree. And I will say that reading the book, I honestly was not sure if the missing children were going to end up dying or not. Like I had this hope in me. I was like, please don't, please let them be alive at the end. But I wasn't sure what was going to happen, only because I had just finished another book, which will not be named, so as not to spoil anything.
I know exactly what you're talking about.
Yeah, you do know what I'm talking about. Yeah. And so the kids die, like kids go missing and they die like brutally.
Yeah.
And it was kind of surprising. And so honestly, during this, I was like, well, I don't know. Like, this is actually like, I haven't read Cemetery Boys yet, so I don't know what it's like. This is the first thing that I've read that Aiden has written. And so I was just like, I don't know where this is going to go.
Like how dark are we going, Aiden?
Well, exactly.
How dark is this gonna get?
I was like, are we gonna really take it? But I was glad that they were all okay. And I loved
it. Would have been too much. Like to lose, to find out that John and Michael are dead and then to have
and then to lose all those five, you know, kids.
Five more kids. That would have been way too much for me to handle.
I loved the like constant reminder from the shadow of, I'm not gonna kill them. I need them alive and terrified, because that's what gives him his power. And I absolutely loved the shadow being the villain in this.
Me too.
Taking this kind of quirky little detail from the book of like, oh, his shadow got loose. Ha ha ha. That's funny. She has to sew it on with thread, and making it like very sinister.
Yes.
This is, I think, we've already said that this is like one of the most genius things about this book, but something that we have talked about recently in our podcast with a couple of different retellings is that often an element from the fairy tale that you need to explain ends up defining your whole world of your book. So with Little Red Riding Hood, if you're retelling Little Red Riding Hood, we need to know why wolves can talk, right? if it's just a quick fairy tale, it doesn't really matter. But if you're retelling it into a whole book or a whole movie, we need that explanation. Mm-hmm. With Jack and the Beanstalk, it's the same thing, where if it's a fairy tale, giants are in the sky at the top of a beanstalk, we just accept it and move on. But if it's a full book or a full movie, we need to know the ramifications of that in this world, and how does that affect the people in the world below and in the world above. And I think with Peter Pan, it's kind of the same thing, where we need to know where the shadow came, like, why does this shadow separate from Peter? I think about Once Upon a Time, where Peter Pan is a villain. And I think Peter Pan is often interpreted as a villain nowadays. I agree with your UGG there. I'm there with you. I can rant about that for multiple hours. But I can name other fairy tale or other Peter Pan retellings recently that have turned him into a villain. And I really like that this does not turn him into a villain, that we love this Peter. You know, you've come to adore him, really, and you're on his side. And so I do think that, like, we need to know a little bit more about the shadow if you're retelling Peter Pan, especially in this kind of a way.
Yeah, and it just works out so perfectly well. Like, you know, I'm reading it and I'm like, the shadow, of course, that makes so much sense that, like, the shadow would get away, and it's the fear. And then the feelings, you know, it's preying on Peter's feelings, you know, for Wendy and all the things. And just, it becomes this, like, super sinister villain. And it's so perfect too, because how do you catch a shadow? You know, like, how do you, you're like, how am I going to find this thing? How am I going to catch it? What do you do? And I love that at the end, it's all of the, you know, children who have gone missing, who help Wendy pull the shadow and get it in order for her to sew it back onto Peter and connect it to Peter again. I did kind of have this moment of like, Is that going to work? Like, is that all it's going to take is for her to sew it back on again? Can it be that simple? But in the end it was. And I was like, all right, I think I'm okay with this. That's fine.
Because it pulls from the original book, I think that's what makes it work. Mm-hmm. You know, if that was just the solution without that being part of the original story, I think we would question it more. But because we have the original book and the original play, and that's how you reattach a shadow, of course, that's what's going to work. That's what's going to stop it.
Exactly. And I so love that division of Peter is everything that is light and joy and happiness, but everybody's got a dark side, and his dark side is literally his shadow. And I think that what the shadow uses against him, these feelings for Wendy, and this kind of, he grows up because he falls in love, and the shadow uses that to escape and to steal Peter's power. But in the end, it doesn't steal Peter's power. It actually makes him stronger. Because love is just an extension of light and joy and happiness. And I think that because Peter has been allowed to have that growth and have that love and experience it, and then experience a little bit of the darkness in losing Wendy and in not being able to keep, you know, to make that his priority because he has a job to do, it gives me this kind of solid understanding that he's going to be able to keep the shadow fully in control from here on out, because now he understands it. And he understands that the way to defeat the darkness is to keep loving and keep laughing and keep having joy and hope. And so to me, like, that balance was achieved really well in a really, like, profound way.
It was. It's just so perfect. Even know what else to say right now, because I just love it so much and it's so perfect. So just super fast, we're not going to dwell on this because I don't want to spend time on it, but I will just say, in for everybody else who's listening, so Drew mentioned Once Upon a Time, the TV show. conversations I could have about that show, but the Peter Pan depiction particularly, I was like, come on, you just ruined this for me. Like, it was okay at first. And then I was like, now you've dragged it on for entirely too long. And this is horrible. Anyways, I stopped watching the show very shortly thereafter, at any rate, for other reasons.
Leah, a friend and I completely rewrote Once Upon a Time as how we would write it. We didn't write it line by line, but we did like episode descriptions basically of how we would have rewritten it. And we wrote 70 episodes of how we would started with the initial premise. And season one sticks pretty close to what season one was. But then
season one was good. We
completely rewrote it. And it was one of the most fun exercises I've ever done in my life.
I can imagine.
I'll send it to you. If you're interested, I'll send it to you.
Please do, because I liked season one and even season two, but then after that, it kind of starts to slowly go downhill. And then when Zelinda comes in from Oz, well, it just tanked. Anyways, that's a whole other discussion. Maybe one day we can have I could do like a whole bonus episode for my Patreons on just that show, because it would, yep. Anyway, moving on.
It's a wild show.
Oh gosh. Okay, so I wanted to see if you picked up on this or if this was just me. So Wendy's mom, I love Wendy's mom. I love that when Peter comes in, I love that she she doesn't remember him, but she recognizes there's a familiarity there. And like, she's like, I know I'm supposed to know you, but I don't remember who you are, you know? So, she's a nurse. And Wendy is talking about studying to be a nurse, and then she ends up, you know, deciding to be a doctor. But I love this because in Hook, the reason that Peter and Wendy, you know, go to London to see
Moira.
Yeah. Moira. It's so confusing. anyways, Wendy's daughter is his wife in the movie, but they go to see Granny Wendy is because they're opening up like a children's hospital in her name. Like, cause it's like, she took in all of these kids, the lost boys really, and took care of them. So they open up this children's hospital. So I kind of like felt like there was a connection there. Like, I don't know if Aiden did that on purpose or if that was, again, just me. Like it's funny because, I mean, because there is like that connection with Wendy in the hospital, and Wendy in the book goes and she volunteers at the hospital and helps the kids and tells them stories about Peter, just like Granny Wendy and Hook did. So I liked that connection there.
Yeah. So this connection comes from the Great Ormond Street Hospital in London, which is commonly referred to as GOSH. And so when Jay and Barry died, he left the copyright to Peter Pan. He donated them to the Great Ormond Street Hospital.
Okay.
And it's a hospital for children. So for decades, all proceeds of anything related to Peter Pan went to GOSH, including like Disney had to pay them so that they could make their movie. Like, it's been that way for a long time. And now we're like over 100 years past his death. And so there's all this kind of complications with, they're trying to retain those copyrights because, you know, that money, you know, they've relied on it for a long time and it's going to an amazing cause, which is a children's hospital. But so that's the origin, I think, for both of these things. In Hook, they actually specifically mention the Great Ormond Street Hospital. And then here, I do think that is part of the connection, is that, you know, he's connecting Wendy back to the hospital. But I also really like that her struggle is like, initially she wants to be a nurse, but actually what she really secretly wants is to be a pediatrician, and she wants to help children specifically because of what has happened and what she's gone through. But she also has like this guilt that she feels like, you know, what happened to her is her fault because she doesn't know what really happened to her.
Right.
And so once she's able to come to terms with everything, she's also able to come to terms with like what she wants, and able to move on. And we find out in the epilogue that she's going to go study. You know, she's starting pre-med and yeah, I love this. I love the ending. And it also talks about how she's now like seeing a psychologist and how she's, you know, now is aware mm-hmm. of an anxiety disorder that has gone undiagnosed. And I think that's the ending of this is really well done.
I agree. And it's so important to talk about those things because especially nowadays, you know, so many people struggle with these types of things and anxiety. And so, you know, we need to get out there how important it is to talk and to go see somebody and to talk about it and to, you know, recognize what's happening as well. So absolutely. I love that. All right, Drew, did we miss any little connections? Now we did talk about okay. some of the characters and whatnot. We just talked about the hospital. So what else? Tell us now. I'm sure you've got a list for Cassie and I. What did we miss?
I do have a list. I do have a list. I'll mention the things that we have just for the sake of having them all together. I'll just briefly mention the ones that we've talked about before. So we have already, we know the pirates are the cops. So we have Smith is Smee. Checo is one of the pirates. Mm-hmm. Detective James is a reference to both Captain Hook and James Matthew Barry. We have the silver ring is kind of a reference to Hook's hand or to Hook's mm-hmm. hook rather. We have Wendy's mother tells her that the fairy lights watch over children as they sleep and keep them safe. That's a specific reference to when Mrs. Darling says goodnight to the children in the mm-hmm. original story. We have the Llewellyn Davies boys is referenced through Mr. Davies' last name and his son Matthew. Mr. Davies' first name is Donald and his other son is named Joel. The only thing I could find is that there are two different versions of Peter Pan that have been illustrated by men with the first names of Donald and Joel. I don't know if that's a specific reference or just a coincidence, but it's there for you. This one is like a little, this one's interesting, is that when Wendy is telling the children in the hospital stories about Peter Pan, she tells them that Peter lives second star to the right and straight until morning. So in the original Peter Pan, it is only second to the right and straight until morning. And Disney actually added the word star because of the song. They needed another word in the lyric and they changed it to second star to the right. So that I think is really interesting that that is actually specifically a Disney reference because the original doesn't say star. When we first see Wendy and Peter in the backyard together, the first time they're really able to talk, he asks her, or he first says, Wendy, why are you crying? Which mm-hmm. in the original book, the first thing that Wendy says to Peter is, boy, why are you crying? There's a moment where he's listing off things that should be scary to you because he says you should be scared of the dark. And he says lions should be scary, quicksand and nasty tasting medicine. And the medicine is a whole thing in the mm-hmm. first act of Peter Pan in the Darling Nursery. Wendy says that she's 18 and Peter thinks about it and he says, well, I'm 19. And that is a thing that he does in the original book. Anytime a child says how old they are, Peter decides that he's 1 year older. So he is always the oldest, which is interesting mm-hmm. coming from a character who doesn't want to grow up.
Yes.
But that is a specific reference. When Peter meets the kids and talks to Wendy, And then they leave when Jordan shows up. Wendy, this is hard to explain. So Peter and Wendy are having a conversation and Jordan arrives and Peter leaves, right? Mm-hmm. And so when Wendy and Jordan then leave to go to the coffee shop, I think Wendy looks up and she sees a white bird flying across the sky, right? And it's kind of meant to, I don't know if it's meant to be that Peter is the bird. I don't think so. But J.M. Barrie actually wrote a book called The Little White Bird. And it came out in 1902, so 2 years before the original play premiered. And it is kind of a prequel to Peter Pan. That's where you find out like where he came from. And he mm-hmm. used to live in Kensington Gardens with the fairies and all of that. We have the fake name for Peter is Barry, which is a reference to J.M. Barrie. We have the acorn necklace. We have only two more things. So happy thoughts give her the confidence to defeat the shadow, which, you know, happy thoughts are what allows you to fly. And then this one might be my favorite is that Peter gets a genuine smile from Mrs. Darling. And Wendy's a little jealous that he is able to get that smile from her. And then when Wendy denies too strongly that she's dating Peter or Barry, It says that Wendy's mother almost smiles, and it's tucked in the right-hand corner of her mouth. And that is a whole thing in the original book about Mrs. Darling has a kiss, a hidden kiss in the corner mm-hmm. of her mouth, and Wendy can't quite get it. But the person who gets it at the end of that book is Peter. And so here, Peter gets that smile that Wendy has always seen hidden and couldn't quite get. And you know, I love that. I think that's so beautiful.
Yeah, it's perfect.
So that's everything that I caught.
Okay.
There may have been
more. I caught most of those.
Yeah, did you get? Okay, cool.
And he does mention pixie dust too. He does take out the pixie dust at one point.
Yeah.
Well, good.
And what I appreciate is that he succeeds where a book that Drew and I recently recorded an episode on did not quite succeed with its references. Whereas with this one, if you know the references, it enhances your reading of the story. But mm-hmm. if you don't know them, it doesn't detract from your understanding of what's going on.
Yes.
Whereas we just read and talked about a book that had a bunch of references in where it really was, if you didn't understand the references, you had a lessened understanding of what was happening in the story.
Gotcha. Okay.
And so it's an important balance to strike. I liked this. I like the little mm-hmm, nods. Mm-hmm. I firmly believe that Donald and Joel are names that were chosen deliberately. If you said that there's two illustrators.
I do too. That's I don't too think that that would be
a coincidence. Speaking as someone who wrote a Wizard of Oz retelling where every single name is either a direct correlation to the character or is stolen from somebody associated with the Wizard of Oz in some capacity at some point. Like, it's different, I believe.
I did that with my Once Upon a Time rewrite. Every single one, every single modern day version of the fairy tale character, they were all references. And I have a list that is just a breakdown of this is the fairy tale character, this is what their new first name means, and this is what their new last name means. And I just went through the whole thing. So yeah, I'm with you. I love those kinds of references.
Me too. It's perfect. Heartless by Marissa Meyer is like that too, where she really pulls out like all of the references from Alice in Wonderland. And it's very thorough and every tiny little detail. And she kind of does too. She takes a detail. Okay. Like you read Peter Pan or watch Peter Pan and you're like, okay, he loses his shadow and then Wendy reattaches it. And then you move on from there and go through the rest of the story. Right. So it's not like a huge thing, but it's important, of course, but it's not a huge thing. Right. But then that's what Aiden took and made it into this big thing and made it into the villain. And Marissa kind of does that in Heartless too. There's, a very, very small reference in the Mad Hatter's Tea Party in the book about the three sisters and the mm-hmm. treacle well. And Marissa takes those three sisters and does something really big and fantastic with them in the book. So, but it's the same type of thing. And I love those types of stories where it's, you know, a retelling or a reimagining, or a continuation of the story in a different way where they have all those little connections and, you know, you're able to pull them and cause it does really, really enhance the story. And it just makes it that much more fun. Cause you're like, you know, I'm sitting there reading it and I'm like, oh, he's totally Captain Hook. Yep. Oh, Checo, totally one of the pirates' names. Yep. Love it. I always remember Checo's name, like, cause it stands out. Right. Yeah. You know, like, I mean, just all the little things. I love picking out all the little things like that too. It just makes it more fun when you're reading as well. So
Heartless is my favorite Marissa Meyer book. Ugh. I love Heartless. So,
oh my gosh. I will never look at
the
queen.
She does some brilliant things.
Yeah. She does. And I will never, ever, ever, ever look at the Queen of Hearts in the same way again. Never. And that book also destroyed me, but that's besides the point. Anyways, you all can hear my thoughts on that in my very, very, very first podcast episode. So anyways, all right. I think that's really good. I loved this, you guys. I'm so glad that we got to chat about this book and hash it all out. This was super fun. Why don't you tell everybody where they can follow your podcast, if you have a website, all the social media, all the good stuff.
Well, that's usually my job at the end of our podcast episode, so I guess I'll do it here. You can find us on a variety of social media platforms. We are most active on our Facebook page, Out of Slippers and Spindles. You should join our Facebook group because lots of times we will put polls on our Facebook to have our listeners help decide what we're going to do next. And so if you want to be part of those decisions, that's a great place to join. We also hang out there a lot, and people will post all sorts of different stories related to whatever we're talking about. And we love to interact with people there. We also have an Instagram page where we post a lot of kind of behind the scenes content that Drew puts together, because he's very good at that. Graphics and pictures and factoids about certain things. And that's also at Of Slippers and Spindles. And we also have an email address if you want to send us a line at ofslippersandspindles@gmail.com.
Yeah. All right. And you can find us to listen on Spotify, Apple, Stitcher, anything, anywhere you're listening to podcasts, we are there.
Awesome. And I will put links to everything in the show notes for today so that you guys can go and check out Drew and Cassie's podcast as well, because you should. It's really fun. So thank you guys so much for being here to chat about this book with me.
Thanks for inviting us.
Of course. Yes,
thank you. This was fun.
It was a lot of fun. And hopefully we can find another book that we can hash out in the future and you guys can come back on again.
Awesome. Sounds good.
Well, thank you so much, everybody, for listening and continuing to listen in season 3. So thank you for continuing to listen, everyone. And we will chat again soon. Today's episode featured the book Lost in the Neverwoods by Aiden Thomas. Be sure to follow YA Book Chat on Instagram, and don't forget to like and subscribe wherever you get your podcasts so you can get your episodes as soon as they are available. Have you checked out the YA Book Chat Patreon yet? You should. There are plenty of fun, great benefits for Patreon members. YA Book Chat was created, is hosted, and edited by me, Leah Stuhler.